K-Mud Podcast presents.
Awesome. Okay, so this is Wild Ginger in studio today with dear friend Charlie Custer, who wants to talk with me about tree frogs.
And no wonder, tree frogs are so much fun. Yeah. I was really excited to hear this was coming up today because we had a great experience with tree frogs lasting over a couple of decades. We moved up to a place that had a beautiful pond that was slowly filling in and eventually choking over with cattails and water lilies. And it was also being taken over by bully bullfrogs who slowly but systematically extirpated all of our tree frogs.
There'd okay. be some. So let's make sure that people know the reason that you don't like these bullfrogs is because they're non-native to this community.
That's right.
And they're bullying. They really are bullies and eat all the other frogs, yes?
They eat anything.
Oh, they eat everything.
Yeah. And they're really very destructive. And in fact, if you're a commercial pot farmer, not that anyone does that anymore, you're required by the county to extirpate bullfrogs as part of your water management program.
What?
I learned that when I was chatting with guys at Browns, I guess, you know, just
wow.
getting advice. And they said, so the county's making you do it, huh? And he said, no, my wife's making me do it. We love tree frogs. So anyways, so the point of the story, we dug out all the glop. We spent a few months with a BB gun getting rid of any remaining bullfrogs. Frogs. We filled it up with water again, and there was no life in the pond. I mean, it was, you know, we had just begun. It was just a hole in the ground filled with water, and we started to hear the tree frogs in the forest around us, you know, making noise weeks before they came to the pond as usual. But that winter, they took over the pond, and they had no enemies of any kind, and they reproduced so thickly that we had to watch our steps as we left the house. I mean, really watch them. If you just stepped, you would squish tiny little tree frogs smaller than your fingernail.
They're so
there
precious.
Were tens of thousands
what?
Of them just flooding the place everywhere. It was thrilling. And the racket those buzzards made all by themselves all night long. Luckily, our bedroom is at the back of our cabin, so we could sleep fine. But it was thrilling. When I'd go out the front door to pee in the middle of the night, it would wake up Liz, you know, from 40 feet away, just the racket from opening the door. It was thrilling.
Oh,
now, then life returned to the pond, and we haven't had a flush of babies like that since.
Well,
but they still come back to the pond every fall. So it's funny. The hippies have always called tree frogs chorus frogs because of all the racket they make in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And the old timers here have called them tree frogs because they're banging around in the forests all summer. And then they come to, you know, waters when the rain fills them enough to breed. So they're thrilling locals. They're just great to live with.
That's so awesome. I love hearing firsthand experience besides my own. It's so wonderful to hear. And I immediately thought, okay, the pond and the restored habitat was just saying, you know, ask and you will receive with abundance and get all you've ever asked for and more. And I think that every species kind of does that too. When it first
yeah.
gets back, it booms, but
yeah.
then it figures its little niche out. And I'm sure that all the other animals in your community and in your neighborhood were extra happy to eat extra frogs that year too. You know, it probably helped the whole, you know, it's all a circle, right? So that's extra special that you got to support all of that. And now those bullfrogs are gone, which is super important. And I have to go back and ask, did you try to eat them?
I didn't, but the dear old friend who had actually introduced them into our area 50 years ago now
wow.
Brought them up planning to eat them, and she hated them. So
so they're not even edible.
Well, they're not to everyone's taste anyway.
I see.
Yeah, they're not French frogs.
Okay. I have tried frog legs out in Kentucky,
yeah.
And I don't think they were the same kind of bullfrogs. They're huge over there. They're like huge. They're even bigger,
huh.
surprisingly. But you know the old Mark Twain story about
jumping mm-hmm. frog of Calaveras County?
Mm-hmm. Man, I yeah. love that story.
Yeah.
Anyway, Calaveras County, that is not a place for frogs. Have you ever been out there? It's like high desert. I'm like, boy, those poor frogs.
That's a whole different kind of frog.
I also yep. love that you were sharing about their habitat and how it changes throughout the year. That is one of the many things I was going to bring up today is that they're not called tree frogs because they live in trees because they don't. They're called Pacific tree frogs because they do hang out in the forest until it's time to reproduce. And the reason you hear them all night is because they're nocturnal. So you've given us a lot of hints towards how to recognize these neighbors in our community. And I also learned that whenever you listen to a movie that has frogs in the background, it's always going to be the Pacific tree frog, because those are incredibly abundant in LA as well. So I think that's really cool that they're well known, you know, worldwide famous. They're the famous frogs. They actually can come from anywhere. They live everywhere from Canadian border all the way down to Baja, California. So they're really prevalent around here. And I think even in places where you'd be surprised, because they're not in the trees and they don't need water year round. And they do live in holes in the ground. They'll like take over old rodent holes or things like that when it dries out. So there's so many magic things about frogs. I just couldn't wait to talk about them, because they're almost like resurrectors, right? Like when it's super dry out, they just like dig down deep in the mud and they disappear. They're like, forget summer. And they come back when it's nicer out, right? Uh-huh, like spring, fall. I would be a frog if I was not a human, because I do not like summer either.
Well, I've wondered, you know, once in a while I'll come across one in our sunroom where it really does get hot, but we do water stuff in there.
Yeah, it's the water.
And I wonder whether they, you know, they're refugees there, or they came in because they like it. I don't know whether to take them outside or to wish them well. What do you think?
It's a tough question. I once actually, not frogs, but I saw two fence lizards fighting over the territory of getting to be in the greenhouse. And it was amazing to witness, because they puffed their bodies up real big and like literally looked like water balloons with arms popped out of them and a tail hanging out the back. And they just like wrestled like crazy. They were hissing. Like they look like giant dinosaurs, but tiny size, you know? And one of them won. And I was like, well, he won. He obviously wants to be here. So I never move them out of the greenhouse, but I make sure on hot days that the doors are open so that animals can get out if they want out. But I kind of think to get water year round, that's a primo spot. I have tree frogs year round because they live in the houseplant bowls, like underneath the plants on the deck, where there's always overflow water. They survive all summer there. And whenever you talk, they talk louder. They're like trying to compete with you. So I'll be on the deck on the phone, and then all of a sudden the rooster goes, and then the frog is going, and I'm like, I can't even be outside.
That's one of the things I've never been able to figure out. Sometimes when I turn up, they all drop silent. They say, it's around. And other times when I laugh or something, they'll say, oh, that's hysterical, and they'll all go off. Just all go off.
Yeah. I really don't know what makes them decide that, but I have been having some chicken problems at our house lately, where we have some chickens that don't want to go in. They're new, and they're new to the flock. They don't want to go in the pen at night, and they're trying to get in the trees instead. And then, unfortunately, of course, foxes are coming, and you can hear chaos in the night. And you know that the fox is near because the chicken stalks clucking, and then the ribbits stop too. And you're like, oh no, the fox is near. Let the dogs out, because we need to keep those chickens. So they're kind of warning the other animals in their community, right? It's pretty cool. I've heard that about blue jays and other animals too, that work together, right? They're like all talking to each other, like, hey, there's a bobcat coming your way, or whatever it is. The ravens will go off. It's all teamwork out there, and we just happen to be in the mix. So we have a tiny pond at our house too, and it's just to support those frogs so they can always be there. And I try to keep my dogs from drinking the water out of it, because I want it there for the frogs. It's a wonder. I got to see a frog attack a bug one time, but I was so amazed to learn. I mean, I have this huge list and I'm going to get all excited and go out of order, but I learned that in Sonoma County specifically, and maybe many other places, but not where I've never seen this myself where we live, giant water bugs can eat a tree frog. There are water bugs that attack and kill tree frogs. They're like three or four inches long, and they have these huge like front, like, I don't know what's the claws kind of, like, they're terrifying looking. Water bugs can be so evil, and they can bite so hard. Now I know why. It's because they're attacking frogs. That's amazing. One of the main predators of tree frogs is these water bugs.
That's incredible.
Even their larvae are bigger than a full-grown Pacific tree frog. I've never seen these in the Mattole. I've never seen them in anywhere I've ever lived, these big water bugs. But I was reading an article. The author was from Sonoma, and she said they're all over down there. So one of the main predators, they say, on all the tree frog website, the Pacific tree frog, because I want to make clear, Pacific tree frogs are not tree frogs, and they're not the ones that live like in South America that are actually rainforest tree frogs with all those amazing colors. They are very pretty, but they're not like, you know, neon green with blue spots or anything. They're not the poisonous dart frog kind of vibe.
And they're all pretty much along the Pacific coast? They aren't much in the interior?
Yeah, it's the coast. It's the coast. They like it wet, so they kind of stay out of the the desert. That's why that Calaveras County story is just like, but those were bullfrogs. That's not what today's article is about.
What do they call it? There's a ring-tailed frog or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and they're quite rare now, but they used to be pretty common, you know, before we ripped up all the watersheds in the gold country.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, there's the topic.
Oh, there's so many.
So many. Well, Charlie, I would love it if you want to stick around, but I'm going to turn now to this list of homework I did about frogs because I spent a lot of time on this for you all. I've been trying to get other people to come on the air, so I'm really glad you did because not only did your information tie into what I wanted to share, but I think true life experience speaks so much larger than words.
It's so fun.
And I wonder – do you like the bullfrogs? Were they just as noisy before you got your tree frogs back?
A whole different kind of noisy.
Yeah.
They're putting out a long, low, loping kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But they'll have conversations.
Yeah.
And it's not very pleasant.
It's like, I'm sorry that you're not native. We can't keep you. It's a tough world out there. It's one of the reasons I had a hard time being in environmental science as one of my many careers throughout life was because it's so hard to say, you deserve to stay, and I brought you here, so now I'm going to kill you. Like, I didn't personally bring these invasive animals to the high country, but I'm working for the company that brought them, and now I have to kill them. Like, I think I quit. Like, I can't. It's so hard. But I give you so much props and respect for bringing back habitat and bringing back a native species and getting rid of the bullfrogs that taste terrible. So they don't have any good purpose. Why are they here, right? Blows my mind how
many
animals.
Take it up with the goddess, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Thank you so much. And you're
it's
welcome
to be
stick
here.
Around. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And
I'm going to stick around until you play the frog sounds.
Oh, you want me
sounds.
To start with that?
Well, you can do whatever you want. But she knows I have a meeting here at the station at 3.
So Charlie Custer is one of our board members. He also has his own radio show that is really informative about governmental issues, and it's just more important than ever before. So
politically
if you have
correct, we can review
with the
every
best
other
theme
Monday.
Song. I love that theme song.
Yeah.
I always crank it.
Yeah.
It
yeah. Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, of course.
I like your show better.
Oh well. It's maybe less depressing. Sorry. I'm killing time while I pull up the right tab that has the sounds on it because I have it like linked to a hyperlink and click over here and, I look
like
I'm
sorry to jerk you around. I didn't mean
you're
to do
awesome.
That.
You're awesome. I'm so stoked that you came on the show and I'm see if I can find it. I don't know where it went now. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
One of the cool things about them, too, that frogs are fine in vernal ponds, you know, where there's depressions that only hold water maybe 2 or 3 months of the winter, and
that's
they're
exactly
bone
right.
dry in the summer.
That's exactly
and they don't
right.
have any competition for, singing their song and making their moves and having their babies.
You know, that is the largest killer of tadpoles is the fact that their ponds might dry up too soon. But they actually, when they start to feel like it's getting pretty hot out, their hormones kick into high gear and more of them grow legs faster to get the heck out of Dodge if it feels like it's going to be a quick summer.
Wow.
They're really magical. The more people study them, the more they're like, oh, of course these ancient cultures revered them as, you know, the mystics that they are. I mean, and you were saying they came back so prevalently. 4,000 eggs in a day. And I should say in a night because they actually don't breed during the day. They breed at night, but you know.
Yep, that's what all the racket's about.
I just can't believe it. I'm going to have to go in order, Charlie, because I can't find my little tab that tells
don't,
me what
Don't let me scramble
is.
Anything. No, it's been great to be here with you. I'll just sneak out in a few.
I think this is it. Okay, so I went to a couple websites. One of them was called MrToad.com, and believe it or not, it was one of the most useful ones. I couldn't believe it. I didn't think that would be the most educational site because it has the silliest sound, but sounding name anyway. I'm going to go back from the beginning here. We'll see how far we get before you got to sneak away. So I'm going to go quick. First, I want to say MrToad.com, also NatureMappingFoundation.org and DFW.state.or.us. So that's the Oregon Fish and Wildlife. Those are the sources I used. The Pacific chorus frog is actually its name. That's its given name is the Pacific chorus frog, also known as a tree frog. So when you said the hippies call it a chorus frog, it's because the hippies are right.
It's because the hippies read books.
Yeah.
And the old timers tell each other what everything is.
Or maybe they named the frog. Who knows? But, you know, they are called the Pacific Pacific chorus frog in a lot of books as well. And so anyway, it says they're the most likely the most abundant amphibian on the West Coast. Huh. The geographic range of these frogs from British Columbia to Baja California and from the Pacific Ocean to the Nevada and Montana mountains. Huh. So even further than I said, within this huge range, they can be found from sea level to over 10,000 feet.
Wow.
Amazing, right? So yeah, they do not live in trees. They live terrestrially in and on the ground. These Pacific chorus frog can be distinguished from all other frogs by two main characteristics. No other frogs have both of these things, okay? They have a presence of little orangish, yellowish toe pads that are like grippies on the ends of their feet, and they have dark stripes that come from their nostril all the way through the eye and back past their ears. So if you find a frog that has both of those things, it's a Pacific tree frog. And the reason why we use that to identify it is because they can be so many range of colors. And I'm going to talk more about that because there's conflicting evidence online about why they can change colors and how they change colors, and I have my own opinion too. So, but first I want to say the sticky pads on their toes help them to climb around on plants. They kind of suction to the plants that way. They're really good climbers, but they don't do it unless they're trying to evade prey or catch something, but they don't like live up on those trees. They're not trying to get up there for any reason. Speaking of food, they eat arthropods, including beetles, flies, spiders, ants, and other invertebrates that you don't want around. So keep your frogs, because they eat what you don't like to see on your bathroom floor. adult tree frogs catch their prey with long elastic, like sticky-ended tongues, which we probably all know. They also can eat algae and decaying vegetation and dead earthworms and fish and insects. So they have a quite huge diet. They'll eat pretty much anything that'll fit in their mouth, is my assumption. They're like the goats of the water. tree frogs live in wetlands, meadows. They breed in shallow ponds, moving slowly upstream seasonal pools. They might live in your water tank, and they might live in the roadside ditch. So if you like to wait for those really wet mornings and ride your truck through the ditches, you're probably killing frogs. So stay on the road, please. breeding sites are only a few weeks of the month or of the year. So just a couple months of the year are they able to breed at all. And they spend the rest of the year surrounding uplands in the tree area, in the treed areas. During dry periods, they are only active at night, and they like water and shade and rocks and logs and rodent burrows to protect themselves. So these frogs aren't very large, 1 to 2 inches long, and the females are larger than the males. During breeding season, males can be distinguished by looking at their throats. The females have a smooth white throat, and the males will have a dark brown or yellow throat with lots of wrinkles in it because their throats get much bigger, so they can make that deep sound when they croak and echo with it. But one of the most fascinating things about these frogs is their color-changing ability. This one website said that unlike chameleons, they do not change colors to match their surroundings. I completely disagree. I have totally picked up a tree frog and set it on my deck that's like a white color, and it turns white. And then I set it on a leaf, same frog, same day, uh-huh. It turns green. Have you seen that happen?
I've seen how these tiny little creatures are different colors,
totally,
but they're both
different
on my grass. So I wouldn't say that they're influenced in particular. So I don't know.
Interesting. Okay.
I'll start paying more attention now.
I would love to know more. If you do this experiment with me, see what happens. Pick one up and put it somewhere else and see if it changes to match its environment, because scientists online are all in an argument about it. And they're not saying, some people say this, they're saying this is a fact, and then the other side is saying this is a fact. Uh-huh. So I'd really like to know. But the one thing that I did find, and this evidence was from 1963, some guy did a genetic study and said that their color, the redder color is recessive, while the brown color appears more dominant. And he's saying some of them are green, some are brown. And there were pictures online of some, and I think more inland, they can be more reddish color to match the reddish soil. But I'm not sold on the fact that they're born green, they stay green. I really think they all change color. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion, though. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't actually been proven yet, so there's always more science to be done. And who wouldn't want to study frogs, really? That sounds so much fun. And more experiments where they tested on frogs, the poor little things. I'm going to skip that part. And what else can I tell you? Prolonged breeding season, 4,000 eggs, blah, blah. I'm sorry, y'all. I had so much fun information, I couldn't cut it down. I was like, this is so interesting. Aggressive interactions between adult male Pacific chorus frogs are common during these interactions. Males use a call called the encounter call, which is a trilling sound, which is a severe warning, and it will tell the intruders to retreat. And then they have a different sound, and I'm going to click again on this. We'll see. I am just terrified that this computer is going to keep playing a song when I click on this link again. I'm like, I really don't know what was playing, and I feel terrible about that. This is public radio. That's what I'm going to try to say. Volunteer run.
You volunteered for this.
I put myself on the spot. Now let's see if we can get... This is the advertisement call. Let's see if we get it to go. Dang it. I don't really know where that music is.
Oh, that's maddening.
Oh, yeah. It is. So now I'm going to pull it up on a computer over here while Charlie tells me a little bit more about frogs. What else do you know?
Well, they're good company. They often just like kind of sitting around with us. They're afraid at first, and they've got better things to worry about. I've sometimes wondered whether some animals kind of cluster around our cabin a little bit because we're the scariest thing going, and we're not after them. But they figure that it'll scare away other monsters. But
yeah.
I may just be flattering myself. I don't know.
Un more momento. So, Charlie... Overall, would you say having these loud animals in your life is a plus?
Oh, it's a great blessing, but not for everyone. There were tales years ago when I first came up here. This was in the days of the famous psycho Vietnam vet scare.
Uh-oh.
And one of the crazy Nam vet stories was about a guy who lived by a frog pond that, his cabin was too close to. And being a Nam vet, he grabbed his gun and he machine gunned the pond.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think he killed many frogs, but he drowned them out while he was pulling the trigger anyway.
Sure.
So not everybody thinks they're great, is my point. But maybe you have to be a psycho Nam vet. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think they're great.
I hope that eventually those sounds lulled him off to sleep and
yes.
soothed his weary soul.
Yes.
I hope. Okay, so we're going to run out of time so we better do this quick. This is a slow series of advertising calls, male talking to the females.
Yeah.
That's so loud, right?
Yeah.
So the one in the foreground is obviously the one we're talking about here. And then this is the sound in rapid series. Still the same ladies I'm around. He's just saying it faster. And then this is when he's telling other males to back off.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And you've heard that sound maybe when you pick him up?
No.
No.
Well, I don't pick them up mostly. No.
Oh,
but
how do you stop yourself?
Well, actually, I try not to molest them, but when I do, they've never talked back, really.
Oh,
they just kind of look at me.
Okay,
but
that's good.
I'll mess with them a little harder next time.
No, you don't have to. Don't do it. But sometimes if I've taken a little too long to try to catch them and they're kind of over it, when I pick them up, they make that noise and then they pee on you. That's their other self-defense.
Yeah, I'll watch out for that.
So, yeah, those are the two self-defenses. But one thing I got to share before we move on at 3 o'clock, I have to move on. But you got to know, this is so funny. One of the things about those calls is that when all those frogs are together and they're all in the same place, all making the same sound, they can get really confused. And sometimes anything that's not making a sound seems like it must be a female, even if it's another male who's just taking a break, or if it's not even a frog.
Uh-huh.
They have found male Pacific tree frogs specifically trying to mate with salamanders.
Aww.
Because they're not making a toad noise, a frog noise, so they must be a girl. And I love that story. I'm just like, get it while you can, you guys.
Maybe means yes.
Yeah, that's that for frogs.
For frogs.
Yeah.
Only for frogs.
Only for frogs.
To be clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
This has really been fun. I'm sorry I got a race off.
No,
I'm sorry
you're awesome.
You got a race off too.
That's the joys of this show. I get half an hour to talk about whatever I want to, and then we move on. So thank you
Yay.
So much for being a part of it today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie.
See you again soon, I hope. Bye-bye.
Absolutely.
And thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay, one more quick fact. Let's see if I can find one more thing. Oh, I wanted to talk about how special tadpoles are. I mentioned that when they feel the heat coming on, they can develop more quickly. And that's a really cool thing about them. What I should really say in the last 2 minutes, minute and a half, Avoid using pesticides and herbicides, folks. Amphibians are highly permeable-skinned animals that can absorb toxic chemicals. They can be poisoned directly or indirectly through their food. If you're like trying to poison a slug or a snail, moss killer on your roof is a toxic chemical that can kill frogs, and the runoff usually goes directly where those animals live, in the wetlands or the water pipes or even your sewer overflow. So please, please consider using non-toxics. Control non-native plants and animals, like Charlie was talking about today. The reed canary grass degrades the quality of wetlands, and we need to control that specific plant, as well as get rid of those invasive bullfrogs for sure. Remove non-native predators. Please don't keep American bullfrogs or snapping turtles in your ponds. Never release bullfrogs into the wild. It's actually unlawful. When designing a backyard pond located away from your bedroom and your neighbors, spring can be a short-lived but noisy chorus of male tree frogs if you don't plan accordingly. For those who love tree frogs, you can encourage them to come to your yard by protecting natural areas, woodlands, wetlands, meadows, stream corridors, and shorelines. You can make buffer areas next to the stream. Vegetative buffers include native plants that would exist there anyway that would help provide a habitat. And you can make little like jumping pads, like literally little zones where small animals can get from one part of your lawn to another because you put some rocks around a tree or because you've planted some big tufted native species that has some habitat and shade so frogs can run between and get where they're going without being seen. Also, you can leave a portion of your grass unmowed. Please, if you live in wet areas, consider not mowing until absolutely necessary, especially in the spring, because those spring animals are trying to use that land. And we made it to 3 o'clock, and I have to move on. That's life. Love the tree frogs. I'm going to play their sound one more time for you.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.